One of the great joys as a tour guide for me is sharing St. Peter's with travelers, St. Peter's Basilica. One of the great joys personally is squinting up at that obelisk and thinking St. Peter saw this on the day he was martyred, the obelisk that stands in the square in front of the great basilica, and then stepping from the lobby into the greatest interior of any building in Europe, with the sun rays streaming in as they have for centuries, and seeing the next biggest churches in the world, where they would be if they were put in that big basilica marked on the floor. It's just an amazing experience. And then climbing the dome and standing before the giant mosaic on the inside of the dome that says in huge letters, "To S. Petrus, you are Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church." And then looking down at the teeming crowds way below, 50 yards below you on the basilica floor, this is all part of experiencing the Vatican and St. Peter's Basilica. And then before I leave that greatest church in Christendom, I stand in the lobby looking out at the square through the door, and I mask the glare of the hot square with my hand so I can look above and I can see a mosaic of Jesus calming the water on the Sea of Galilee. Then I take my hand away and I step into that glare, and it's the secular and modern world, and I carry on with my sightseeing. Visiting St. Peter's, whether you're a devout pilgrim or just a tourist, with a chance to sample that magnificence of all that history and architectural wonder. That's one of the great thrills of European travel, and we're going to talk about that right now. I'm joined by two of my favorite tour guides, Jean Openshaw, co-author of my Europe 101 History and Art for the Traveler's book, and Francesca Caruso, who was born and raised in Rome and is here to help give us an insight into appreciating the Vatican. Francesca and Jean, thanks for joining us.
Grazie, Rick.
Thank you.
Jean, when I was talking about experiencing the wonder of the Basilica of St. Peter as a tour guide, what's your experience taking groups in there?
You mentioned it already. When people first walk in there, the nave, the grand hall, the sheer size of it, the scale, that's what I think blows people away right off. It's hard kind of to comprehend, but you know, the place is simply huge, 2 football fields long. You walk along and there's statues of little babies that are the size of me. It brings together the many elements of construction. You're seeing colorful marble on the floor. You're seeing statues. You're seeing the light from heaven, columns of stone, pillars of light, mosaics, paintings, and it all comes together. The intent was to give people who had made this big pilgrimage from across Europe and walked in there to give them a glimpse of the heaven that awaited them if they remained true to the faith. That's what people still experience today, is the sheer scale of this place.
And, of course, tourists go there as tourists would. Where's the statue of the Pietà by Michelangelo? But a lot of people, this is the culmination of their life. They can travel all the way from anywhere, and oftentimes from the developing world, they get there, they step through that door, and are just overcome with wonder. Even for me as a tour guide, one of my great treats is just I step in first and watch the faces of my tourists as they step in and they see that incredible interior. Francesca, how would you recommend somebody really appreciate Basilica San Pedro?
I think that stepping into St. Peter's, I think you understand the magic of travel. I really do. The difference between being in a place in person as opposed to reading about it or seeing photographs. So the experience of the space, I read somewhere that architecture is art that we walk through. So measuring the space on yourself to really, really engage with that scale. As far as enjoying it, I think that a fundamental thing to do when you go to St. Peter's is to read about it first. St. Peter's is not like looking at the at a painting of water lilies by Monet. The eye must be informed. So if you read before going in and you combine your instinctive personal reaction, you can't walk into a place like St. Peter's without bringing your culture, your beliefs, your ideas with you. So to allow the information and the personal reaction to blend, I think, is the key.
You know, for years I went there as a Protestant with a bad attitude. And then I've learned to park my Lutheran sword at the door and become a temporary Catholic while I'm in there, accept it on its terms. You know, you don't need to embrace everything yourself, but you got to accept it on its terms. And in that regard, it really is a triumph.
It is. And also, why not just simply see it as a shrine to man's accomplishments? And now the fact that they were able to build that without machines, why not see it in that light as well?
Now, Jean, the experience we have today basically comes from the Renaissance about 500 years ago. But it is an interesting opportunity to to get into the mindset of the great Renaissance architects and of the appreciation they had for antiquity.
Yeah, the vision for this church that was built mainly in the 1500s was to resurrect the ancient world. I mean, the church got its start, of course, on the grave of St. Peter, Jesus' right-hand man, who was crucified right there on the spot. Mm-hmm. In fact, he was crucified because that's where a chariot race course was, and that was their halftime entertainment, was to crucify Christians. Mm-hmm. He died, he was buried there, and after Christianity became legal under Emperor Constantine, he built the original St. Peter's.
So that was in the 4th century, early
300s. Yeah. And historians generally just call that Old St. Peter's, mm-hmm. and that lasted for 1,000 years. But by around the year 1500, it was crumbling and the roof was leaking, and they wanted to renovate it. But one pope, Julius II, had the great idea, let's just build a whole new one. So he, basically dismantled the old one and built on the spot over the next 100 years what we see today. Many architects worked on it. Bramante started it, but many architects continued it, including one, Michelangelo Buonarroti, who completed it by capping it with his magnificent 450-foot dome. When he did that, it completed this vision that they had in the Renaissance, which was to take the Basilica of Constantine and cap it with the dome of the Pantheon. And that is what St. Peter's is taking two superstructures from the ancient world and combining them into one megastructure.
Now, that was sort of a humbleness, wasn't it? I mean, like, we can't outdo the ancients, but we can combine two of their elements.
It was to resurrect the spirit of the ancients because they honored them so much.
Now, that's the striking thing, is that this whole spirit of the Renaissance was humanist and even honored pre-Christian thinking and thinking that would have been heretical a couple of generations before. That they would respect this was quite a departure from the past for the Vatican, wasn't it?
Yes. They thought that they were embracing all thought and all ideas, pagan and Christian, as so that they were truly creating a Catholic or all-encompassing
Catholic,
church.
Universal. There you go. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about the Basilica of St. Peter's. I'm talking with Jean Openshaw and Francesca Caruso. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Jordan's on the line from Tampa in Florida. Jordan, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you. Longtime fan.
Great. Thanks.
Essentially, I'm wondering, as a younger person traveling, we'll be backpacking when we're there, and we're wondering, A, what type of dress would be appropriate for the average backpacker, as well as how to reserve tickets online if we're staying in hostels, like just how the process works, basically.
Very good questions, because this is one place where you do have a modesty code. Francesca, what are the standards?
Okay, so the dress code is rather rigid. You shoulders and knees have to be covered, which doesn't mean you can wear shorts as long as they come over the knee. And then backpacks, make sure that you don't bring big backpacks with you. At the museum, they'll make you leave them, and sometimes it's a bit difficult to recuperate them. But at St. Peter's, it's hard. It's a little bit more difficult to get through the metal detector with those. As far as reserving your ticket for the Vatican Museum, Jordan, that's really easy. All you have to do is go on the official website of the Vatican, that's vatican.va, and you can reserve your ticket 60 days before you go there. You just reserve them for the time slot that you want. It's very simple. You go right to the entrance, you go right in, you don't have to worry about anything.
From a tourist point of view, you've got the Vatican Museum, which is one of the greatest museums and the most exhausting and the most crowded museums in all of Europe. And as Francesca said, if you want to stand in line, you'll waste hours. You can go to the website and make a reservation, essentially an appointment, and go straight in. The Basilica itself is mobbed in the middle of the day, generally, but I've always found if you go early or go late, the place is cool, it's quiet, it's relaxed. It's a much nicer experience. There's no reason to go in the middle of the day to the Basilica. The third big line is going to the top of the dome.
If you could go before 10 o'clock in the morning, Jordan, that would be ideal.
But Jordan, remember, Jordan, I've never gone to St. Peter's Basilica without a bunch of backpackers just pissed off and stuck outside, and they couldn't get in because they got T-shirts and shorts on, or just shorts. That was the
mm-hmm.
issue.
Yeah.
So long pants, cover your shoulders, respectful dress. This is the most important church in Christendom, and it is one place where it really is enforced, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Jordan. Have a
Jordan.
Wonderful time.
And Marianne's on the line in Southgate, Kentucky. Marianne, thanks for your call.
Hello, Rick. Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. Do you have a comment or a question for Francesca or Jean?
Yes, I was there in 2004, and I made reservations ahead of time to see the Vatican Necropolis. And the day that we were to go, I think the buses were running late, and there was just a downpour. And we got off the bus at Piazza Risorgimento, I believe it is, mm-hmm. and we ran through the rain to go to the office.
Now, wait a second, Marianne, you're talking about the Vatican Necropolis. That would be
yes.
The Scavi tour?
The basement of the basilica where you've got all the tombs?
Yes, yes. And we got to the office, and we were literally dripping wet. I mean, dripping onto the floor. We were soaked to the bone, thinking that we were late, and we were so wet they wouldn't let us in. And as we stood there in the office, this priest walked in, and he said, oh, yes, they can go. So we were led down underneath St. Peter's and went through the necropolis, and it was amazing. Just the different little rooms and the drawings and paintings on the walls and the names, and you could see the symbols of the fish. So if you saw a fish, you knew they were a Christian. And it culminated in the area where it actually says in Latin, you know, Peter lies here.
Wow. This graffiti goes back to the 4th or 5th century, I would imagine.
Yeah, that Scavi tour, I should start by saying that that's not something that you can just go to St. Peter's and walk into. You need to reserve well in advance.
Yeah.
You can do it by email, but I mean, to give you an idea of how traditional this is, they even actually, you can do it by fax. It's that traditional. But you do need to do that several months in advance.
Yes, and I had done this several months in advance. I had my reservations, my dates, my time, and when, you know, things just kind of fell apart, I thought, oh, no, we're not going to get down there.
And there's little wonder why they make it so special and so tough to get in there is because you are seeing one of the true historic wonders, this place where St. Peter, at least supposedly, mm-hmm. was crucified and then buried in a tomb.
And then buried, yes. Mm-hmm.
And it lay there virtually untouched for 2,000 years until just about a few decades ago when archaeologists opened it up again. And sure enough, it's just what the tradition said. You had this tomb of a man that had bones in it, and mm-hmm. it had graffiti on there saying things like, you know, Kilroy was here and I saw the tomb of Peter.
But they analyzed it and it goes back to the first.
And it dates to 1st century AD, which would have been when Peter was supposedly crucified upside down and buried where they built St. Peter's.
It was an amazing experience for me. I am a Catholic. And you were talking about first walking into St. Peter's. Mm. And when I first walked to that basilica, I mean, I cried.
Mm.
And I attended Mass in St. Peter's and just cried. I'm like, wow, I am actually here.
You know, Marianne, I've been long a fan of having people, anybody who can enjoy going to Mass, go to Mass. I think it's every day of the week at 5 o'clock, and mm-hmm. anybody's welcome. And last time I went to Mass, right there in front of the high altar, I looked back and there's a banister it's like a barricade that keeps all the other people away, but mm-hmm. it's not designed. It just sort of draws a line. Anybody who wants to worship, you step right through. You go in and sit down like you're going to your church anywhere in the world, and you have that experience, and it's just anybody can have it, and it really makes that basilica come to life.
Oh, it does, and it just made the visit to St. Peter's that much more special.
Beautiful. Marianne, thanks for your call.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been savoring the greatest church on earth, St. Peter's Basilica in Rome at the Vatican. We've been joined by Francesca Caruso and Jean Openshaw, two guides that really know how to make it come to life. Francesca and Jean, thanks so much. Jean, if you could just sum it up, what are two dimensions of St. Peter's that are really important to appreciate?
Two dimensions. Well, I'll take two sites. How about that? The beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. In many ways, the St. Peter's that we see is a monument built by Michelangelo. And so those two sites would be his statue, the Pietà, that stands there, which was done in his youth and marks the start of his career, and then the dome that he capped the church with that marks the end of his career. I would see this wonderful statue that shows Mary cradling her dead son. Michelangelo did it when he was just in his early 20s, and it stood there even in old St. Peter's.
So it predates the church we see today.
It predates the church that we see today. It was displayed for Holy Year 1500, and tens of thousands of pilgrims walked by, and they were amazed at this artist that they've never heard of, and they could see how he'd made this heavenly scene appear so realistic and so real. And then Michelangelo, as they then built New St. Peter's, he took over as the architect. He completed Bramante's vision as the architect and then began to design this huge dome on top of it. He used as his model the ancient Pantheon and the Dome of Florence, and he did not live to see it finished. It was such a monumental project, but you can imagine that when they finally put the lantern on the top there, it capped the Renaissance and capped his life.
Oh.
There's no better way, I think, than to finish your trip to St. Peter's than to make that long climb up the dome, up the, I don't know, 323 sweaty, claustrophobic steps.
It's a dome within a dome, so you're kind of curving as it goes up.
Exactly. You're walking in between the two shells of the dome, and if somebody stops ahead of you, you start to you take a deep breath and go, okay, guys, let's just keep it moving. But you're rewarded because finally you pop out at the top into this balcony, and you've got the view of all of Rome. And in that way, you realize that St. Peter's encompasses all of Rome and all of Roman history.
Francesca, closing thoughts on this beautiful basilica.
Well, I feel that in the company of these great men, we should add Gian Lorenzo Bernini, who is responsible for the, let's call it, interior decorating of St. Peter's, and also responsible for the gigantic bronze canopy that sits above the papal altar in Peter's tomb. Canopy that was made with bronze taken from the Pantheon, so another connection to the ancient world for certain. And again, that idea of the grandeur of ancient Rome, but also of the theater of Baroque Rome that all come together. And then one last very tiny thing that I would add is the experience of color and light in St. Peter's. I love going there at different times of the day, but in the afternoon there are these shafts of sunshine that just cut across the space and make it truly magical. And I would just like to invite visitors to notice the fact that there is no stained glass in the St. Peter's Basilica. Even the great window that looks colored is actually made of alabaster. And because there is so much color in the materials and the marble and all of the bronze and the gilt decorations, that if they had a stained glass there too, it would be pretty dreadful. We do trend to find stained glass in cathedrals that are white or bare.
Mm-hmm.
So this transparent glass allows the pure sunshine to come in and just make it glow, and there are moments in there that I think can be magical.
It is theatrical and magical, and
yes.
You cannot describe it adequately unless you go there. And talking of Bernini and the theatrical sort of aspect of the Baroque, you could say the Baroque movement was born out of the Vatican with Bernini's work there, I think. And you've got the Piazza San Pedro, which symbolically is like the outstretched hands of the church welcoming in the pilgrims. Was that not designed by Bernini also?
Yes, it was. The Piazza San Pietro was designed in the shape of an absolutely perfect ellipse by Bernini over almost 300 columns that close and yet open onto the rest of the world and embrace all visitors, no matter what their religious background is.
Francesca Caruso, Jean Openshaw, thanks so much for giving us appreciation of what I would consider, and I think most people would agree, the greatest church in Christendom, Basilica San Pietro.
Grazie, Eric.
Pax vobiscum.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. Thanks to the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism for production help today. Our technical team includes Andrew Wakeling, Jonathan Lee, Chris Luzik, and Kate Mulhern-Graham. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. And join us again next week for Travel with Rick Steves.
Grazie, Rick.
Grazie.